Welcome to Legal Latitudes, the Lathrop Law Podcast. In this episode, episode 6, I sit down with Sarah Havens, who in 2025 was appointed as Consumer Attorneys of San Diego's president. Before becoming a powerhouse trial lawyer in California, Sarah was tearing up the mountains as a badass snowboarder. She was landing rotations and competing against the best. Now, she channels that same fearless energy, resilience, and competitive fire into her legal practice, fighting for justice while raising amazing kids and dominating in California's trial lawyer scene. The episode is special because Sarah and I connect in so many levels, especially when it comes to the extreme sports and how we translate that drive into the courtroom. We are now working on cases together, and I couldn't be more excited to go to battle in court, a trial, for our clients side by side with her. We dive deep into Sarah's journey from her early days on the slopes to her first experiences as an attorney, the legal conferences that shaped her, and a raw, honest conversation about her journey with alcohol, why she made the decision to quit drinking, and what embracing an alcohol-free lifestyle has meant for her life. It's a personal and powerful part of our discussion that I know will resonate with many of you out there. We also break down the reality of PI trial work today, from navigating the endless legal seminars out there to the evolving landscape of personal injury litigation. If you're looking for inspiration, insight, and a real and filtered conversation about what it takes to thrive as a trial lawyer, this episode is for you. Hit play, follow us on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and if you enjoy it, share it. Let's go. Sarah Havens, thank you for joining me today in Legal Latitudes. I'm excited to interview you, get to know you a little better, although we've been spending some time together. So why don't we get to the beginning of all? You're originally from LA, right?
Born and raised in the San Fernando Valley.
San Fernando Valley. Okay. And then...
Totally.
Big family?
No, small family.
Okay.
I have two little sisters. They're twins.
All right. And growing up there, did you know that you were going to be a lawyer?
No, absolutely not. When I was in third grade, I wanted to be a professional dancer.
Okay.
And like Paula Abdul was my idol.
Nice.
And it didn't really occur to me that like that was even an option.
Mm-hmm.
Although I always argued a lot, so people make the jokes, right? But okay. It definitely wasn't something that I thought, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be a lawyer.
Okay, so you wanted to be a professional dancer, and that seemed like a more likable option, especially living in LA, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the famous dancers of all times come out of there, like Britney
right.
Spears. Well, she was after my time, but
mm-hmm.
It was Paula Abdul was real big then.
Right.
Jennifer Lopez was on In Living Color.
Okay.
Janet Jackson was super huge. And that type of dancing, which we now refer to hip hop,
right?
It wasn't really called hip hop then. It was called like modern jazz or all these things. And my mom, who was born and raised in Hollywood industry, her dad was a director, and both of her parents were actually professional dancers
mm-hmm.
long before, like, in the 20s.
Okay.
She grew up in Hollywood, and she said that type of dancing would be going out of style, and so it wouldn't be a good career.
Okay.
It did not go out of style.
Okay, but you made other decision anyway. And in between becoming a lawyer and being... projecting yourself to become a dancer, you had some time there where you were doing extreme sports?
So that was after high school.
After high school.
Right. So I had a passion for dance, and that kind of fizzled with my parents' finances and my mom's desire to not have me schlepping around to interviews, as she would say, as many
okay.
of my friends were going to auditions all
mm.
the time. So when I was in high school, I got a rented snowboard one day, and I went to, I think it was Big Bear, and I fell in love with the park. And then I would tell people that I get to dance, but on rails and
right.
jumps. So I could spin, but in the air. So I was still dancing to me.
And then you start snowboarding and doing rails, doing jumps. And did you get into competitions? What was... your approach there with when it comes to snowboard? Free rider, more of like a contest fan, a park rat, how they call it, right?
I was a park rat. I still am a park rat.
Okay.
My son's a park rat, or he better be a park rat. He skis. So, in the park.
Yeah, so snow park, right.
I started competing in USASA in my freshman year of college, which was San Diego State.
Okay.
Obviously, that was a lot, but it really kept me out of trouble because during the week, I was studying really hard so I can go train up at Big Bear during the weekends. And then when that season ended, I decided I wanted to move up to Tahoe. There was a community college there. Mm-hmm. So I went back and forth for a couple years going to community college and riding during the winter, the mm-hmm. spring.
Right.
And I would go to San Diego State for the fall semester and summer school.
Okay. And when is it that you decide, okay, I am done with snowboarding? Was it an injury? Or when is it that you decide to switch paths and become a lawyer?
When I was at a competition.
Okay.
And the girl who won doing a frontside 7 on okay. a jump that I was struggling to clear.
Right.
And years prior, I had taught that girl who was, I think, 16.
Do you remember the name of that girl? Because like a front 7, it's a.
It was a new trick back then, yeah. Okay. It was like girls, women
were. It just
weren't,
sounds to me like this girl is like one of the best snowboarders.
Women were starting to do 7s in.
Yeah. Okay.
This was probably the late 2000s.
Okay.
So I had taught her at a Roxy camp, the same okay. girl who was probably 15 then,
yeah,
14.
Yeah.
I had taught her frontside 5s.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 2 years later, the 16-year-olds were like killing it. So it was cool. It was really awesome to see the progression of right. the women's sports.
Mm-hmm.
And when 16-year-olds were just coming. And now if you look at the progression, like Jamie Anderson, best snowboarder in the world.
Right.
I grew up, she was yay high and right. we would train together. And, you know, watching where the sport has come mm-hmm. has... It's just been great to be a part of that.
Right. So then you see this lady doing a 720 and you're like, okay, I'm done.
I wouldn't call her lady. She was probably 15 or 16.
Oh, okay. So this little girl, this young girl doing a 720 and you're like, I'm done with this sport.
No, I wasn't done with the sport. I just felt that it was ready. I felt that I had passed the torch and it was ready for me to start my next adventure.
Right.
I was never done with the sport. I was just done with it as a competitive competitive
yeah.
thing. And really the love had died once I was doing it so competitively
mm-hmm.
because you're under the microscope 24/7. It's mm-hmm. not like now where you can go film with your phone and you can, you know, try the labs that these plaintiff lawyers do right. where you get to get up in the lab and fall and get up in the lab and fall and mm-hmm. try all this stuff. Only Shaun White had that at the time.
Right.
He had his own private park where he could go train, no one would see him, and then he would show up and he would stomp the craziest trick nobody's
right.
seen.
Mm-hmm.
That kids now have that. We right. didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime I was learning a new trick, I was in the park, everyone was there, there was no lab to practice mm-hmm. without looking stupid.
Right. Right. And it's interesting because now you're a trial lawyer, right? And we'll talk about that transition, but it's the muscle memory that other lawyers don't need to develop as much as trial lawyers when it comes to standing there, doing, you know, a cross-examination, being prepared for when it was snowboarding, it was like a jump on the middle of the slope that you had to prepare, like your legs needed to, you know, kind of like act like a shock. And absorb the impact. You were learning these things. Now you're learning how to deal with an expert giving you an answer that you're not expecting, how to get on your feet, right? So to me, I also grew up doing extreme sports.
I know you did.
And I also I was doing competitively. I was doing snowboarding too.
When I saw that one video, the 2-second shot
right.
that I think Dan Ambrose posted, but I could tell, you know, when people know, right?
Right.
Like, and you were
oh,
doing
yeah, when I was snowboarding in Tahoe. Yeah.
Yes.
It was like a 180
you
coming
just
from
did
a,
some little jibs.
Right, right.
And
right.
I was like, he knows how to ride.
Yeah. So, yeah, I grew up snowboarding. I learned when I was 10 years
you
old.
You can tell the way people walk, the way people dress, the way people act, the way that people ride, like mm-hmm. your style, your demeanor. You know, you don't have like the, your gloves don't have like the dangly thing.
Right,
and,
right.
you know, like, you know, when people know what they're doing, you can
okay.
just tell. And I
okay.
could, I was like, oh, He rides Park.
Yeah. Yeah, but like then, you know, it's like you're either one of the top snowboarders in the world, which right. I was not, or you just decide to do something else. And then what fulfills you and gives you somewhat the same adrenaline,
right.
among other things, right? Because what we do has that adrenaline component, but then also has like we're making like change in people's lives. So right. fast forward for you, you're snowboarding and then like you go all the way to 2024, 2025, president elect for Consumer Attorneys of San Diego, right? When is it that you decide to become a lawyer first?
So I was a philosophy undergrad.
Okay.
So that kind of, you know, I loved philosophy. I loved the logic part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've always kind of thought my brain always worked in that way. Yet it's kind of all over the place. So there's the creativeness right. of that. So I was always oddly good at math, but I drew to, you know, the art sort of more. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting combo about how that came to be. But it just seemed like it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. When I made the decision, I was concerned that I would do the same thing I did with snowboarding. I fell in love with it. I started competing. I never cracked under pressure, but I fell out of love with it right. once it became a job, no. right? We love doing our work, but right. when it's something that you need to do, it's something that you have to show up, that you right. need to do this, I fell out. I mean, I quit, essentially. Mm. My husband had two horrible injuries that ruined his career.
Mm. He was also a snowboarder?
He was a free skier. He was a pro skier.
Oh, wow.
And so he's at home nursing, you know, another knee surgery, and I'm out there, like, not pursuing the passion that was taken from him.
Right.
And I think that was difficult for him to watch because I still could have done it. And once I gave that up and stopped trying to film and do contests and be the best, I killed it. Like, I learned all four fives that season.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like,
and
it was the pressure weighing on you.
I think that's what it was. And I was concerned that that would happen with law. I was concerned that I was so excited and I would love it. And I'll tell you why it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a lab. I can go fall on my face. I can go practice. I found a community that let me be that
right.
and let you practice, let me fall, let me fail. And I didn't feel like people were going to be like, well, Sarah's stupid. She doesn't know what she's right. doing. And with snowboarding, you know, if you're on the chairlift, I'm sure you probably did
right,
it too,
right.
you would see, you know,
yeah.
like Tara Takidas, and I'd be like, she fell doing a three.
Right. Everybody watching. I remember we had a jump
and you compare yourself,
in Chile.
You know?
They call it the Hollywood jump because mm-hmm. it was right oh, yeah. under... Right under the chairlift, and it was like, you either become famous or
right.
infamous. So.
So that jump, we have that at Mammoth, because I right. lived in Mammoth for many years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom main jump.
Okay.
It's the Hollywood jump.
Okay.
Have you been to Mammoth?
Maybe they name it that way after Mammoth. I've been to Mammoth, yeah.
That we have that jump at Mammoth.
Okay.
And you know Main Park. Main yeah. Park is right over it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you're being watched all
right.
the time, and you're getting yeah. filmed. And filming then, you can't film and throw it away. Like, if somebody's bringing out, we would hear... Going over jumps, you're hearing click, 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 click.
Right, right, right.
Like, it was filming.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so now you have the same pressure, but it's more welcoming, the community and the... Because there is always a pressure, right? When you're in trial, that's like the ultimate, the pinnacle of pressure. Or maybe when you're presenting at a conference, which you have been doing often. But in practicing, you don't get injured or get embarrassed as you would... in snowboarding. So it's a little bit more welcoming
well,
in that sense, right?
I would say the stakes are much higher when it
right.
comes to doing trial work.
Yeah, yeah,
so
for sure.
really, it's much more terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to lose. I'm not going to,
mm-hmm.
you know, break something. And I'll tell you, you know, as an athlete, when you're injured,
mm-hmm.
and I luckily never got injured, but I'll tell you, I know from everyone who has, when you're injured, you don't think, oh, that hurts. You think, oh, my God, I can't
yeah, what-
ride.
Right.
You think, oh my God, how am I going to ride? Like,
mm-hmm.
I can't, I have a contest, I have this, I have that. You're not thinking about the pain. You're
mm-hmm.
thinking about your inability to do your passion.
Right, right. Like how long this injury is going to take me
how
away
long?
From what I like to do.
Exactly.
That's the thought. As soon as you think you have an injury, that's the first thought, at least for me. And I assume for everyone who likes sports, right?
Right. And yeah. so many times you see in our cases, where somebody's maybe riding a motorcycle or they're doing something perceived to be dangerous by the jury and they get injured doing what they love. Mm-hmm. And many people will say something like, well, that'll teach them never to do X again. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That person's going to get right back and do that up as soon as they can.
Right, right.
So I always found that interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's awesome that you know, we've been talking about trying a case together. And we're trying to work on that, right? To co-counsel and be in court together, and that we have this background. I never made the connection that about like this. Maybe you did. I just didn't. And the adrenaline of being in front of people that really feels like you're dropping into something. You know,
absolutely.
Like you're like, okay, it's your turn to give your closing, your opening, whatever. It's like, okay, I'm all in, and you're somewhat nervous before, you've been preparing, you stand up and you're gonna do the best you can, right?
And you're practicing. So people always ask me, it must be totally different from going to being a pro snowboarder slopestyle to being a tri lure, and I'm like, no, it's exactly the same. Like that feeling of being on the top of your run, about to drop in, you're visualizing, you're going over and over again in your head, the tricks that you're gonna stomp, and how you're gonna do it,
right.
And you're just thinking it over and over again, and your nerves are crazy, and you're totally terrified and petrified and thinking, why do I do this to myself? I'm never gonna do this to myself again.
Right.
And it's silent. That's the weirdest thing about this stuff, is time and sound change. So I'll be blaring music, hip-hop in my headphones when I'm snowboarding, not when I'm trying cases.
Yeah.
But when you hit a jump and you're in the air, it's silent.
Silent.
And when you're about to drop in,
you forget
in,
about the music you're playing. You're
it's just
not,
the world just pauses and or speeds up, depending.
Right.
And when you're standing at that top of the run and you're about to drop in, and I would do like Vans ones, so you'd have these huge cameras in your face, and it's silent, and you have that whole run to yourself, and everybody's staring at you, and then you drop in, and like, time stops and magic happens.
Right.
By the time you get down, you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to do this again.
Yeah. So how do you connect that silence with like trial work?
You know, it's a lot about mental focus.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot about visualizing what you're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm about to get up and do a presentation, I'm thinking about my chapters of my story, my headlines, so to speak. And I'm just trying to get calm and get, like, breathe and get calm. Even just talking about it, I can feel like I'm getting so excited, you know?
Right, right.
And I've shockingly always done extremely well under pressure.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you can relate to this.
Mm-hmm.
When you're, like, I wouldn't be able to clear a jump, or I wouldn't be able to land a trick and practice over and over and over again, and then I would freaking stomp it on my run.
Right.
Some people are the opposite. They got it down, and then once it comes to the real deal.
Yeah.
But I could always stomp stuff in the run that I couldn't get in.
Yeah, the ones who don't perform well under pressure, we have a saying in Spanish. I don't know if it's translatable to English, but we say cold chest. Pecho frío, pecho frío, cold chest.
You know? What does
it's
that
like,
mean?
It's like a cold heart. It's like they just like lack the
you crack under pressure.
Right, right. So like cold chest. That's like a soccer, you know, football term. Argentinians,
like
Chileans.
Like when you have that moment.
Yeah, and you just fail. You just don't do it well.
Yeah,
and you've been preparing and, you know.
Who's six just was playing soccer and he had a breakaway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're watching, he had a breakaway and he missed it. And he was like, oh, you just can feel it, you know. You're
but,
just,
you know, like he's just like, he's so young and these things ultimately.
Well, we all have that.
Yeah,
We've all done that, you know, and you're going to fall down.
Right,
it's not like you're
going
to stomp every trick.
It's about coming back and do it better the next time.
Right.
And that's what we do all the time. It's like we're trying to practice as much, go to conferences, right? And that takes me to, I mean, we could talk about your transition from snowboarding to trial, and I think that's fascinating, and we can keep talking about that within the topics that
too.
We want to cover. But I would also like to talk about the different conferences that you have gone that have shaped who you are. And I am going to do my own disclaimer here. There are so many conferences, and we know so many people out there that, you know, every single conference has one specific thing that makes them unique. And we don't want you to look bad with all of your friends that do different conferences. We just want to know your story, you know, what shaped who you are. Because I remember when I became a lawyer and I started watching the Consumer Attorneys of San Diego, CASD, videos, presentations, you were always there. You were taking some leadership there. Now, right. Fast forward, you're president-elect, which... Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's like a big honor, you know, and I'm very proud and very happy to have you here as a president-elect.
Thank you.
Need a trial lawyer who will fight for you? Call Lathrop Law Firm at 760-723-9612 or visit www.lathroplawfirm.com.
So, yeah, so I'm sure that from the moment that you start as a lawyer to the moment that you are right now, there are many lawyers, conferences, you know, the workshops that have shaped who you are right now.
Right.
So what is that path that you took? Why don't you give us a little bit?
Right. So I didn't feel, I just didn't really fit in, I felt, at first in law school. And I was just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and excited, but definitely lost. I would say I was definitely lost until just pretty darn recently, actually, and still finding my way. But if you're a Sex and the City fan, there's Carrie says at one point, she says, I felt like patchouli in a room full of Chanel. Mm-hmm. And that is how I felt for a very long time.
Okay.
Until I clerked for Judge Denton.
Oh,
he was
nice.
A prior plaintiff's lawyer. He's past president of Consumer Attorneys of San Diego. Mm-hmm. Well-known in San Diego, brilliant trial.
He has a great reputation.
Yes.
I mediated a case with him. The case resolved.
He's fantastic. He kind of took me under his wing, and I didn't understand why, but if you meet his wife, Cindy Sheehack, she's also a little firecracker, so I was like, oh, well, now I kind of see it in hindsight, but he really took me under his wing, and then I just kind of, you know, I was watching the motions, and everyone was just... I'd never even been in an office before.
Right.
And I'm here clerking for a judge in chambers. Like, I didn't know the rules of just how to act in a business. You know, like, I went from the action sports industry to working in a judge's chambers.
Yeah. In an industry that still is very hard for women to, you know.
Male-dominated industry.
Yeah.
Cutthroat, very, you know, both are very cutthroat. Mm-hmm. Cutthroat, you have to have a thick skin. It's gotten a lot better since the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the way before the Me Too movement, I didn't know that was just normal in both industries, really. So, yeah, I kind of, when I saw a plaintiff trial lawyer try a case, who's a well-known, I did not know this at the time, but he was a well-known plaintiff's trial lawyer, and I watched him do an opening, and then 776, the first witness, and I was like, that's what I want to do.
Right.
It was a moment. It was a moment in my life where I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do.
That's awesome.
And then after the trial, which took some time, this lawyer got like 8-figure result.
Can you say who that lawyer was?
I'll say it off the record.
Okay, yeah, no worries.
And then he took me under his wing, and then other people just took me under their wings in San Diego and outside of San Diego, and then I went to the Trial Lawyers College. And, you know, what I do is I just find where I feel the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
And if I'm in a room and I don't feel the warm and fuzzies, I don't just automatically run away. But I'm really trying to be cognizant of, is this the right room for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard before about, you know, if you're not valued, maybe it's not that you don't have value, it's because you're in the wrong room,
right,
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a struggle for me self-confidence-wise because of that. Because
mm-hmm.
I still, you know, I feel less like I'm wearing patchouli in a room full of Chanel because I'm a little more Chanel these days.
Okay.
But, you know, that complex is still there.
Right. But so far, I mean, you're a trial lawyer. You have several trials, and we're going to talk about those, the ones that you want to discuss today, of course. But you opened your firm, right? Are you going to your third year on your own?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
this will be our third year.
So 2022, you opened your firm?
I did.
What's the name of the firm?
Havens Injury Law.
Havens Injury.
Inc. And
okay, and you've been handling personal injury cases, right?
Exclusively.
And going to trial.
Yes.
Co-counseling with other lawyers. Like, what's the type of work that you're doing now with your own firm?
So the short answer is premises liability and auto cases mm-hmm. with a little bit of product defect.
Okay.
Product liability. You know, I started off as a car crash lawyer, and right. I was doing exclusively car accidents, working at a firm that mm-hmm. had extremely high volume of car accident cases. And I've realized through all of these teachings that we all know is that I have to really feel the case
right.
in my heart. And I jumped off 50-foot jumps and gave myself whiplash every single day for a decade, year round.
Mm.
And it's really hard for me to relate to somebody who has a sore neck for a couple months. I get right. for maybe that lifestyle or what they do, that was catastrophic for them.
You know, that's interesting because I have suffered concussions in my life. And sometimes it happens to me that I see these clients.
You're like, suck
some
it up.
Of them, not, of course, not all of them, you know, like some clients that come to ask for help and you're like, okay, if this guy got injured, I am just like horrible right now, you know, because the amount of injuries and blows to my head that I received when I was a little kid, like how am I going to get out of this if this guy is not able to get out of something way lower in terms of impact, you know, forces, etc. But those are a few. There are always, you know, exceptions to the rule. And what I do, and I know that you do too, is now on our own, we control what cases we take and which
right.
ones we don't. And we need to like the client, like
right.
think that he's someone not only likable, because maybe someone is not likable at the first, you know, interaction, but someone that has a story and that you believe, that you believe that what they are telling you is true. Like, basically, avoid frivolous lawsuits, right?
Right. However, there's a huge disclaimer there. I'm somebody who just likes everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I have not proven myself to be the best judge of character
right.
when it comes to that. And I think I just have a big heart, and it's I don't lie, I don't cheat.
Right.
And so it's hard for me to, like, comprehend somebody that would or could.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times mm-hmm. I have liked a client, I have liked their story, even though maybe in hindsight, definitely in hindsight, you know, the facts didn't quite align, but I just felt the warm
and
fuzzy.
Just, it's like a romantic type
yeah,
of feeling.
And,
like
and
you
I,
wanna help.
I try to be cognizant of that. And
yeah.
in a trial I have coming up, our mediator, who's a judge I love and respect, have known for many years when she was on the bench, said, I think you're too close to your client in this case. And
right.
I had to take a step back and say, am I overvaluing this case because I like the client? I don't think that's the case in this case. You know, she was a defense attorney, and she gets that it's about what a jury sees. But it's really difficult. It's still something I struggle with about
yeah.
how I decide to take a case or not take a case. And I don't know the answer to that question.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody knows the answer to the question,
right.
really.
It's a gut feeling sometimes. You know, it's is this person telling me the truth or no? But ultimately, you end up finding out if you're right or wrong.
Well, sometimes
so I think you
they're
can
not.
Put,
sometimes, I would say most often, or maybe I just try to see the best in people.
Right.
I would say most often when this happens, that person truly believes that whatever happened, and they truly believe whatever is going on in their life
mm-hmm.
is happening and that it was caused by the accident.
Yeah.
And that gets compounded by so many things in life.
Right.
And it's all about your perception. And so we have to be the objective people saying, I get that it's real for her and this is her experience, but is that
the reality?
Right. She's looking at through her lens.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take 10 steps backwards and look at it, and that's when you pick up the phone and call a friend.
Right.
You know, or I send the evidence to somebody else, or I look at it and I have somebody give an objective look. Am I being jaded? I really like this client. I can't tell you how many times I've really liked a client and been burned, and I might still like that client.
Right.
I just overlooked things because of
no.
that.
We could all learn a little bit of, you know, judge character better, and we would save ourselves a lot of time, money, and like headaches, right?
And to be fair, that's kind of the luxury about coming into cases later on.
Right.
Because for most of my career up until now, majority of my cases were coming in within days of the incident happening.
Mm.
So you might have this horrible crash and think, oh, you know, this is going to be a huge case. It was a commercial vehicle, you know, they're in the ER, there's like blood and scars, and then, you know, that it's uninsured and the guy's fine, which is fantastic, in 3 months. Great client, but whatever. And conversely, you might have the fender bender that you see nothing in, and then they turn out to be a wonderful client who gets surgery. So right. It's really difficult early on in the case to evaluate that.
Yeah.
When you come into a case a year or so later, the pieces have been kind of laid, and you've got some evidence, objective evidence, to be able to meet that client and think, okay, well, does this really all match up? So, but at the same time, you have the case that's already been worked up, maybe not the way you would have wanted it worked up.
Right, that's the low side. So now you're saying I'm coming late in the case because you're like an attorney that gets hired by other lawyers to
brought in,
right, to try the case, right? Because that's what you like
right.
to do. So,
or essentially get it ready for trial with the anticipation that it's going to trial.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't all. They often don't
right.
go to trial.
So to
unfortunately, but fortunately, you know, you have to do what's in the best interest of the client.
Right. So let's say that you meet a Sarah Havens in 2024, 2025, that is just starting as a lawyer, and wants to be where you are right now, and you want her to make the best decisions. What are the things that you would tell that Sarah Havens? Or let's think about maybe a daughter, you know, someone that is coming after you. What are the things that you would tell that person? This is how you do it. This is where you go. This is who you have to surround yourself with. These are the workshops you should do. What would be that advice that you would give this person?
Well, the first thing I would tell them, which coming from the action sports industry, hopefully this person isn't coming from that background, but if they're like me, they have the spunk and have, is that hosted bar does not mean open bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Took me a little too long to learn that lesson, but you know, you come from, you know, when you're a snowboarder living on couches and
right.
somebody has a hosted bar, that's an open bar.
Okay,
you know, what's the point of that bar?
That advice that
it's all you can drink.
That goes straight to young Sarah Havens.
Yes, right. And that's why I'm sober. So that would be my first advice: is to just maintain your composure 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's a woman, I would say that even more so, you're held under a larger microscope. And I think that when men maybe overindulge a little bit, it's funny. You post about it on social media. You laugh about drinking whiskey and falling asleep in the middle of a restaurant. And that's funny if you're a man. It's not funny if you're a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks, but also maybe we shouldn't all
sounds
be posting
unfair.
On.
Sounds unfair.
It's, you know, I think none of us as plaintiff lawyers, as the leaders in our community, should be in public acting
right.
that way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give us a good name.
Agreed.
We're supposed to be leaders. We're supposed to, you know, be the role models at all times. And I don't think that looks good for our industry. However, there's definitely, what's the name of it? You know, it's different. For women, they're looked at differently.
Right. So, okay. So, first tip would be behave. Okay. The second would be, let's
maybe
talk about
only have
from,
one or
from the
none.
trial perspective,
right?
Because
so right?
things have changed. When you were a younger lawyer, there was this, you know, the ranch, and now the ranch are two places. And we don't want to get into the politics involved, but there are certain things that young lawyers could do to
right.
improve their game.
Right. So here would be my advice there.
Mm-hmm.
Is to definitely be out there trying all the things, getting on your feet, learning from the best, without a doubt. But take it all with a grain of salt. This is an art, not a science.
Right.
And you hear a lot, you can't be jury fence, you can't be this person. And that's true, but I see a lot of, I don't want to say younger attorneys, even just attorneys that they're often not younger, they're often older. I see them really drinking Kool-Aid of a particular brand. I don't want to say brand. And I could restate this shorter because I think this is very important.
Yeah.
That I'm seeing this a lot is that whatever it be, whatever section, there's this kind of cult-like thing to it. And people are becoming extremely blinded to like...
Copy other lawyers, what they do, what they
yeah,
teach.
Yeah, but also, like, I can't really explain it. It's like, oh, it's this...
like, this is the way it's done. You do it only this
but
way.
But it's also this, not celebrity of it. What do you say, celebrity of it? But this, like... Oh, this is this person and this
like
is this
a devotion,
person.
Like a type of devotion for certain people.
You know, I saw this at Jerry Spence at the ranch, right?
Okay.
And Jerry Spence is a good lawyer. There's no doubt that Jerry Spence is a good lawyer. And he's done a tremendous amount for what we do.
Right.
And how great lawyers are today. And he's a mentor to me and many people. But when I see people just have this cult-like... And I see this not. I see this with Nick. I see this
with Nick
Rowley.
Rowley.
Mm-hmm. I see this with people around Nick. And I'm not saying don't learn from these people. I'm just saying they're humans. They're people. They fell down. They're not perfect. Not everything they say is gospel and something you should practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this might resonate with me. This might not. But you know. God's sake, treat them like people.
Yeah.
Don't treat them like God.
I guess the insight behind that, it's something that I think the same guys are going to tell you. The same, you know, the Nick Rowleys, the Jerry Spence, all these great trial lawyers will tell you is be yourself and come up with something that is your own, you know.
Which is hard to do when you don't really
potion.
Know what you're doing. So we all plagiarize each other, right? And we should.
Right.
You don't reinvent a wheel. If Keith Mitnick is doing something that's genius, then, you know, we all do that. And we should. I guess maybe look, there's a lot of egos in our industry. There's a lot of egos when we go to conferences.
Right.
And that's the way our industry is. I get it. And then you need that to be a good trialer. You do. You have to captivate the room, right? You have to have that, you know, captivation where people are looking up to you, like, with this, you know, almost godlike presence.
Right.
And that is needed to be able to have the great success that these greats have. I think maybe because I come from L.A., and I came from growing up with, like, the Olsen twins and Paris Hilton and, you know, Nicole Richie and just... all these celebrities all over the place, and obviously, you know, being a celebrity in the 80s and 90s is a lot different than whatever's going on in LA now. I think maybe because I grew up around that so much, maybe that's why I have this, it gives me an icky feeling. It turns me off to this industry when I see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so it's basically...
So my advice, going back to that.
Yeah.
So my first piece of advice would be don't, you know... A hosted bar isn't enough.
Okay, behave. So
My second piece of advice is to understand that these people, these greats, are people that have worked really hard, that have tried this, that have a lot of experience and have a lot to say, but they're not the end-all and be-all of what you're supposed to be doing. If something works, if you feel it's great, then great. Work on, try it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try it, and if it doesn't feel right, or you try it in court and you fall on your head...
Right.
Well, maybe it's just not for you. You could pick and choose, and there's something great about all the things that are being taught.
Right.
And just kind of feed it all in, but don't follow one school of thought and say, this is the only way I'm doing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and then, like, conferences out there, you can reach out to you, Sarah, to me, and ask, like, what are the things that we like to do? Because we're going to give some names.
Number three is get up and get up whenever you can. Go to working groups. Make your own working groups. Get like 5-10 friends together and roundtable cases and get up and practice
your
opening. You have to get up and practice. Yeah. Take communication skills. Read communication books. All of those things, getting up, presenting. You can be the most brilliant lawyer in the world and have the most brilliant ideas, but if you can't communicate them effectively, then they'll never see the light of day.
Right. And on paper, things are never the same than done, right?
Then when maybe you're standing be a motion writer. Maybe
right.
MSJs are your jam.
Yeah, yeah. So real quick, because we're running out of time, but we've been saying this throughout the whole episode, but you're a president-elect for Consumer Attorneys of San Diego. What is this about, like, president-elect? Explain to me, because I know there is a president now, and we know you're going to be the president, like, a year before you become a president, right? So how does
it
work?
No, that's not
okay.
how it works.
Okay,
so it's actually kind of simple. So I've been on the board since 2016.
Okay.
And this is how all these boards work, somewhat right. differently. But essentially, I was voted president-elect, and that was the year, my year right now as president-elect,
okay. yeah.
so I will be president in January.
Okay, so basically they vote you to be a president-elect a year before you become a president.
Right,
right?
But you go up a track in the executive committee,
right.
so I've been an officer on the executive committee, I don't know, 4 years maybe.
Okay, and Consumer Attorneys of San Diego, why don't you tell people, because, you know, we know what it is.
Right.
But not everybody who's listening right now knows
right.
what Consumer Attorneys of San Diego does.
Right.
And,
thank you.
You know?
So in every community around the country, there are local plaintiff trial lawyer groups. AAJ, American Association for Justice, is kind of like the national one, and they have conferences.
Mm-hmm.
In California, we have CAOC, Consumer Attorneys of California,
right.
And they are our voice up in Sacramento. AAJ is our voice up in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as anybody can do to support those two organizations is helpful. And then we are not a political organization, but we are Consumer Attorneys of San Diego. So Consumer Attorneys, Trial Lawyers Association, Associations for Justice. We used to all be Trial Lawyers Associations.
Right.
But during the tort reform era, they didn't like the term trial lawyer. So now we have separate names.
Right.
So long story short, it's the Plaintiffs Trial Lawyers Association in San Diego.
Right. And basically, we only represent people against big corporations. We work on a contingency for the most part. There may be some exceptions there.
The requirement for membership is that you, we just looked at this with the member, that you, I'd have to look at it exactly, but none of that is part of membership. To be a member, you must not represent defendants. And then there's some specific language, I think, about, like, I'd have to look at the exact language.
Yeah.
But you have to qualify as a member. And the main qualification as a member, and sometimes this is audited in all the other organizations, is that you represent individuals against governmental entities, such as corporations, governmental entities,
mm-hmm.
Insurance companies.
Yeah.
So if you represent an insurance company in any capacity,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to...
Right.
The test.
So to me, CASD was the first association I joined, and it makes you become part of this family, right?
That's what we want.
Right.
And that's what I felt when I first joined. So that lawyer who I saw try the case, when I reached out to him right afterwards, and he immediately was very helpful and answered my 15 pages of questions that I had over several shots of whiskey. Because that was then. But he immediately, as soon as we connected, said, I just paid your registration. You're now a member of CASD. And I thought,
awesome.
I have no idea what CASD is. And I Googled it because we actually did have the internet then. And there was a mixer that night.
Okay.
I went, I met some people, and the rest was history. I found my home at that point. I found my niche. I found my people.
That's awesome. You know how I found out that CASD existed? Well, I got invited by my former boss to a speech given by Judge Medel on evidence.
Yes.
And that was...
I was probably there.
Yeah, you're probably there. And
I think it
was probably...
I put that on.
It was done on right next to
Harbor,
the marina.
Yes, I put that one on.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, so that was my first CASD event, and then I became a part of... I was part of CASD even before becoming
nice.
A lawyer.
That makes me really happy,
because
that's what we want. Our slogan is never stand alone.
Right.
And many people before me would not have had success in their career without the community of CASD. I wouldn't be here without the community of CASD. And things have changed in this new world post-2016, post-COVID, post-pandemic. Where it's harder to reach members and get them to collaborate. So we're really working hard to make sure that with all these, the way the world has changed, we can still provide that community and
right.
that never stand alone to members. So
well,
any advice is well taken.
Yeah, no, I think you guys are doing a great job, and I am looking very much forward to get more and more involved as time goes by as well.
Yay,
so,
I will take you up on that,
Yeah, let's do it. So yeah, well, I guess with this we'll wrap up because we're running out of time.
Yes.
So Sarah, it was. I feel like we could be talking forever about different things.
Yes.
So maybe forever. we'll have to repeat another episode and address other topics. If you're listening this and you want to reach out, feel free to reach out. Where they can find you, Sarah? What are your what's your information?
My direct email is Sarah, Sarah, at Havens Injury Law, all one word. You can go to my website, Havens Injury Law. My Havens is Havens. That S gets missed, but you can Google me.
It's like
if you Google Sarah Havens, the snowboarder, though. You won't find me. I was Sarah Mose. That was.
Oh, really?
That was my birth name.
I think I saw that.
My mother hates the word maiden. So.
It's Haven without the E, right?
Haven. But it's Haven.
But with an S at the end. Like so, Havens?
Right. So we call our cabin the Havens Hideaway.
Okay.
The Havens Haven. No, we actually call it the Havens Haven. Yeah. So the Havens Haven.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I know you're very busy. So. Yeah, with this
let's go learn some stuff.
Awesome.